Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Welcome back to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast. We are focusing on the volunteer state and our nation today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community, this time special guest Will Brewer. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us anywhere you get your podcasts and socials at Mill Creek View, Tennessee. While you're there, please subscribe. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with Will Brewer. Incorporated in 1975, Tennessee Right to Life is the state's oldest and largest pro-life advocacy organization. They are a nonprofit, non-sectarian, volunteer-based organization affiliated with the National Right to Life Committee in Washington, D.C., and made up of local county chapters throughout Tennessee. Tennessee Right to Life exists to promote public respect for the dignity of every human life, especially those threatened by abortion, infanticide, partial birth abortion, assisted suicide, or euthanasia. TRL advocates the protection of human life without regard to age, handicap, condition, or social position. Tennessee Right to Life is committed to effectively advocating the protection of human life through educational outreach, passage of protective legislation, and the development of an informed, active grassroots movement statewide. Additionally, members of Tennessee Right to Life assist in providing direct and tangible resources to women and families facing difficult or unexpected pregnancies. Members of Tennessee Right to Life represent a broad cross-section of Tennessee's growing population and include persons of diverse religious, ethnic, economic, and political backgrounds working together to promote and restore societal respect for all human life. Will Brewer is their Director of Government Relations. Hello, Will. How are you today?
Good, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Not sure what Knoxville's like today, but we got clouds in Middle Tennessee. What about you?
We got plenty of rain and clouds in Knoxville.
Oh, good. Good for the farmers, so I'm glad. And out there in Washington, they got beautiful 80-degree weather, so it's upside down all of a sudden. Bit of a rough topic for us today, but I think people have become so numb to the idea of killing babies. We are at the point of acceptance, and with the advent of the 4D sonogram, we really have no excuse to not call it what it is, and that's infanticide. You got to be able to say it, of course. No different than killing a one or a 100-year-old person. So the biggest provider of abortions is Planned Parenthood. I'd really like to talk about that today. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
But before we do, though, just tell us a little bit. How'd you get into this? How long you been doing it? And where do you see it going right now?
Yeah, we're at an interesting point right now. So I grew up in this movement. My parents were both heavily involved in the pro-life movement and Tennessee Right to Life. So growing up, I was at every fundraiser and event coming and going. When I was in college, felt the calling to go to law school and felt the call of you know, who's a more defenseless client to advocate for than the unborn and those whose life is at risk. So I felt God calling me to go to law school and somehow being a part of overturning Roe versus Wade. And I had grand visions of standing up in the Supreme Court and arguing, but who am I to tell God how to execute his vision? So I'm blessed and fortunate enough to be in Tennessee at this moment where Dobbs overturned Roe last year, and we are able to have a Human Life Protection Act here in Tennessee that immediately prohibited all abortions in this state. So blessed to be doing what I'm doing and honored and privileged to be doing it. And appreciate you all for having me on and letting me get my message out today.
Oh yeah, it's our pleasure. So 1975, that's when you all started.
Yeah.
100 years before that, in 1879, a woman named Margaret Sanger was born to a large and impoverished family in New York. She lost her mother at an early age and was raised by her atheist father. This is just facts. I'm not slandering anybody. Though her mother died of tuberculosis, Sanger blamed her death on the fact that she had 11 children. This prompted her to grow up with a disdain for large families and the desire to diminish poverty by preventing certain types of people from having babies. Do you think people know this about Planned Parenthood's founder?
No, and I think Planned Parenthood effectively tries to whitewash it all, and they hold Margaret Sanger up on a pedestal when it's advantageous for them, but they also are very quick to kind of sweep her under the rug when it's also advantageous for her. She was a known eugenicist, and she was a known racist. Many of her abortion-related policies were about eradicating the African American population, and so that's a huge reason why you see so many Planned Parenthood facilities in low socioeconomic and predominantly African American neighborhoods, is because they got their start from a well-known racist in Margaret Sanger,
And
and
you're not
so,
making that up.
and I'm not making that up. It's
79%.
well known. It's been well published. And like I said.
79% of Planned Parenthood abortion facilities are located near either an African American or a Hispanic neighborhood, and 45% are placed so that they are within walking distance of both types of minority neighborhoods. Sanger eventually went to nursing school but never finished, and said she began to work with impoverished women in New York City. About this time, she joined the Women's Committee of the New York Socialist Party and began to advocate in both her speeches and writing for sex education and birth control. Sanger's work with the poor intensified, and in 1921, she established the American Birth Control League, which eventually took the name Planned Parenthood. Eugenics espoused the belief that a certain group of people has the right to determine who should live, who should reproduce, and who should die. Sanger believed that the poor, the disabled, the mentally challenged, and others like them were unfit and should not procreate. Do you think people that work at Planned Parenthood are somehow affiliated with Sanger's beliefs, like almost a cult?
I think a lot of people that work at Planned Parenthood are victims. I think that they are victims to a cult that they don't even begin to conceive the ideology for which they are working. And I think that that has been well depicted in people like Abby Johnson, and there's an organization called And Then There Were None, of former Planned Parenthood and abortion facility workers who have now seen the light and are joining the pro-life movement to tell the world, what they saw when they were in those hallways and those back rooms at Planned Parenthood and other abortion facilities. And
Abby
it,
has a movie about that,
yeah,
right?
yeah. And it just goes to show you how something that seems trendy and seems like healthcare and seems like helping women can be so quickly washed over in the sake of glorification and ideology in the mind of its workers. And so I pray every day for those folks that work at those organizations that they will see the light, because I don't think that they truly begin to conceive what they are doing each day.
Yeah. And Adolf Hitler was I don't know, a devotee of Margaret Sanger. I think he even read her writings out loud and whatnot. So it's had some very bad ripple effects in the world. And today in New York City, it is a fact that more black babies are aborted than born.
Tragic fact. And it just goes to show what a blessing it is that the Supreme Court finally did what they did in allowing states to decide about this issue. Obviously, letting states decide is not as far as we want it to go, but for the time being, what a blessing that so many states in this country have either fully banned abortion or banned most abortions. And so, finally putting a stop to the majority of Planned Parenthood and others' business model. And I've remarked in the last year, for so long, the tagline was abortion is only 3% of what we do. And so it's not, we provide mammograms and body exams and cancer screenings and all of these wonderful things that nobody could possibly disagree with. And abortion's only 3% of what we do. And yet, in the wake of Dobbs, we see all of these abortion facilities across the country shutting down, including Planned Parenthoods all over the place, because clearly it's not just 3% of what they do. If you're having to shut down because 3% of your business model is unavailable to you, well, then your business model was never that good to begin with. And we see them continuing just in a different form, the mission that they have so effectively engaged in all of these decades. Now, you know, they are turning their eyes towards, you know, gender transition therapies and hormone therapies. And so, you know, children in one form or another continue to be the victims inside the hallways of Planned Parenthood.
That's right. So will the U.S. Supreme Court on June 24th, 2022, in a 6-3 ruling, overturn the landmark 1973 Roe versus Wade ruling that recognized women's constitutional right to abortion, even though it's written nowhere in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. So for 49 years, more than 63 million abortions are estimated to have taken place in the U.S. Since 1973, 63,459,781, to be exact by tracking data, from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC. Why are we still talking about abortion in 2023?
Because we are in a society of convenience, and we are in a society of choose your own destiny, regardless of the consequences. And so, you know, abortion is now what was once supposed to be safe, legal, and rare, is now a form of birth control. And you see these Hollywood celebrities at the Oscars or the Golden Globes or wherever, they get up and shout their abortion in terms of, you know, telling the world, oh, I never would have won this Golden Globe or this Oscar if I hadn't aborted a child way back when and continued on my career. So what was once supposed to be, you know, like I said, safe, legal, and rare was always the motto, is now, you know, plenty, abundant, and who cares if it's safe, because it's convenient for us to carry on with our lives, whether that means exterminating children or not. And so that's why we continue to talk about it, is we live in a society of instant gratification. And part of that instant gratification is to abort your child one day and return back to work the next day as if nothing had happened. And that's tragic. But we also live in a society that espouses follow the science. You know, how long during the pandemic did we hear follow the science? And now the science is finally caught up so that we can know that that is a human life, regardless of its developmental age inside that woman. We have gender reveal parties on Facebook every day. We have this 4D sonogram that you were talking about. We celebrate life on Facebook without even realizing that we're doing so. And so as long as we can continue to do that and put out that message that this is a life that is worthy of celebration and worthy of a meaningful life outside of the womb, then we are winning this battle. And I believe that was enough, that, you know, the Roe decision for 49 years was based on faulty science, and it was based on 9 justices who knew nothing about science, making a judgment purely based on their idea of what that science was. And now the truth is that the actual objective science has caught up to where we are, and it was enough to persuade those 6 justices like last summer to overturn Roe. And so, it was 6 justices last year, and we will continue to change hearts and minds of people everywhere until this issue is unthinkable, just like slavery and the Holocaust were unthinkable.
I think you will. And you use the word that they like to use, safe. How safe is it really? I mean, depression, postpartum, and regret are one thing, but what about infection and sterilization and death? Is that common after effect? Or?
Well, it's very common. And you see these places like Kermit Gosnell's clinic in Pennsylvania, where, you know, health regulations were not being followed because it was a money-making endeavor. And so you are throwing out patients' rights and patients' care for let's make a quick buck. And so, no. And like I said, these folks like Abby Johnson and then there were none, and folks like that are sharing that with the world of how unsafe and how unregulated it is once you get down to it. And now in Tennessee, even though we have prohibited surgical and medical abortions, we're hearing almost daily of women who are getting online, and if they're lucky, getting a Zoom interview with a quote unquote doctor in Asia or India or somewhere across the world, who maybe they'll get a Zoom meeting, maybe they won't, but they'll get the abortion pill shipped to them from that far off country. So how safe is that to not even have an in-person appointment with somebody in your own city, state, or country, and then be prescribed a medicine that not only kills your child, but does irreparable harm to your body as well? And it's a violation of state and federal laws to do so. Yeah. So,
They don't have informed consent about because they don't know how much damage they will do to their own body. Right. Obviously, their goal is to flush out or kill the baby. So that's one thing. Actually, Abby's movie, which I can't think of the name of all of a sudden, really portrays that in a
unplanned.
Unplanned. Yes, that's obvious. How many states now are legal abortions and how many can you not get one in?
That's a great question. I know, in Tennessee, we were prepared for this. So in 2019, we passed what we called a trigger law, which meant that once Roe versus Wade was overturned, that would be the triggering event that would then put into effect a prohibition on abortion. So we were ready for this so that when it came last year, our abortion ban went into effect. Many states were not that prepared and are now engaging in this debate during their legislative sessions this year. So I think if I want, I want to say when Roe was overturned, the number was 13 that had full or significant bans on abortion. And now that number is growing mostly across the South and Midwest and conservative states, but I'll be anxious to see what that number is at when we get to the end of this year and so many of these states have finished their sessions.
Right. And where Steve is sitting in Washington State, right next door is Idaho, much stricter. Yeah. And Washington is opening their doors for folks to drive across and have it taken care of right there in Spokane, most likely, which has a homeless problem. And California, of course, is the mother of all sanctuary states.
Paying for people to fly with taxpayer dollars, paying for people to fly into the state to have abortions.
Yeah, unbelievable.
And that's another thing that we're proud of is last year, the City Council of Nashville advertised that they wanted to create $500,000 slush fund of taxpayer money to give grants to citizens of Nashville to travel out of state to have abortions. And so we did pass a bill into law this year that would ban any taxpayer funding, whether it's city, state, or local, to aid people traveling out of state to procure abortions. So, you said a little while ago, where are we now? I mean, So many people think that the war is over, and really the war has just begun. You look at what the other side did for 49 years and how we tried to chip away at that little by little, what we could do within the parameters of Roe. Well, now the shoe's on the other foot. And so now they will begin to, attempt to chip away at Dobbs little by little. And so we have to stay vigilant and keep up this fight because it's just beginning.
Yeah. I've heard they want to park mobile abortion cars or vans next to red states so that people can just pop over and have it taken care of. Unbelievable. The Supreme Court in a 1992 ruling called Planned Parenthood of Southeastern Pennsylvania versus Casey, which was actually the worst of the decisions, Roe or Casey?
Well, Roe is the boulder, right? Roe is what got this whole thing going and opened the door for this to become mainstream. And so it's hard to refute that, but Casey was so detrimental in so many ways because it affirmed Roe and it had, a seemingly conservative court. And so not only did it affirm Roe, but it took away the hope of a lot of people that any type of Supreme Court makeup, whether it was conservative or liberal, would ever do away with Roe. And the thing that we told people for so long leading up to Dobbs is you can't pass bad laws that aren't going to be upheld. Because every decision that it reaffirms the core holding of Roe, which is that abortion is a fundamental right in this country, it's one more nail in the coffin. And the more nails you have in the coffin, the harder it is to pry it open at the end of the day. And so we, even when it was unpopular, lobbied against seemingly pro-life laws that we knew weren't going to hold up in court because we didn't want to add one more nail in the bastion of Roe. And that's exactly what Planned Parenthood v. Casey did, was it was a huge opportunity to reaffirm Roe and say, hey, we decided this in 1973 and we're deciding it again 20 years later. And so not only was it popular back then, but it continues to be popular. And so now, thank goodness, that's done away with. But I think both of those were horrible and awful in their own rights, just in very different ways.
Right. In 2020, there were around 620,000 legal abortions in the United States. The number of legal abortions in the United States has decreased significantly since the early 90s, when it was well over 1 million. I've got all the year-by-year stats right in front of me. Yet, the number of U.S. abortions increased by 8% during the 3 years ending in 2020, reversing a 30-year trend of declining numbers, according to data released on June 15th by the Guttmacher Institute, a research group that supports abortion rights. What do you account for? Oh, well, let me ask you this. CDC noted that abortion ratios peaked at 364.1 abortions for every 1,000 live births in 1984, but dropped to 245 per 1,000 live births by the time the abortion pill was approved for use in September of 2000. So there's the lead right there. Seems to me Planned Parenthood saw this coming, just like Tennessee saw this coming, and has been forced to change their business model from abortion to abortion drugs and even puberty blockers. Is it the pill that accounts for this rise?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you think about the typical abortion facility, especially in Tennessee, prior to Dobbs, had a quote-unquote doctor, an abortionist, who was not just based at that facility, but was based regionally. And so they would drive or fly into the Planned Parenthood in Tennessee on a Tuesday and then drive out to a bordering state on Wednesday to perform abortions there. And so you think about the logistics of having to schedule doctors on which days to perform these abortions. When we passed a 48-hour waiting period in 2015, which meant that a woman came in one day, got all the information about what the abortion was going to entail, and then had to wait 48 hours to come back to procure that abortion. When we introduced that in 2015, it was amazing how much wailing and gnashing of teeth happened from the abortion industry because of the logistical nightmare of having to schedule an abortionist 2 days a week rather than one. And so those are mostly surgical abortions. Now, with the introduction of the abortion pill, you can hand them out like candy, and you're obtaining even more abortions than you were surgically, with even less hassle and infrastructure behind it. And so it completely upended their business model for the better because they were able to hand out abortions far more readily than they were they were just done surgically.
Just like puberty blockers. They always said if Roe was overturned, women would be back to the back alley abortions, die bleeding out in the bathroom with coat hangers. Do you know of any stories in the last year since this is overturned that women are actually dying that way? And should the pill be banned in America?
So first of all, no, there are no stories like that. Dobbs occurred in June of last year. It basically went into effect at the beginning of July of last year. So we're coming up on almost a year of Dobbs being in effect. Those stories are nowhere to be found. Prior to Dobbs being decided, probably 6 to 8 months before Dobbs was decided, Texas had already fully banned abortion in their state, and we heard no such thing from Texas. And now we hear no such thing from anybody in the country. So no, that was always, you know, a lie to gain sympathy for their cause. The abortion pill should be banned in this country because ethically and morally, it is not the true purpose of medicine. I mean, abortion is the death of a human being. The first part of the Hippocratic Oath is to do no harm. And so now you are prescribing a medicine that was originally intended for a different purpose, and you're repurposing it to take a human life, which is contrary and contradictory to the entire medical profession. So no, it shouldn't be approved. And it was rushed through the FDA processes because of the popularity and need of it to become mainstream. And so, here we are 23 years later coming back, and it certainly needs to be reevaluated and re-regulated, if not completely banned in this country.
Yeah, certainly not safe and effective. And we know the FDA has issues from other reasons. This headline in Slate magazine, I don't usually like to quote them and give them the clicks, but it is their headline. Mifepristone will remain legal. I probably said that wrong. Will remain legal in blue states despite a lawless judicial effort to ban it. The Supreme Court halted Texas U.S. District Judge Matthew Kasmarki's unprecedented effort to remove a key abortion drug, mifepristone, from the market nationwide. The order, which appears to be 7-2 ensures that mifepristone will remain legal and excess in states where it remains lawful to prescribe. Do you think that that case will be the dam that the hole in the dam that brings down the whole thing?
I think it will certainly be a step forward on this issue. I think so. You look at Judge Kaczmarek's decision in the district court, the circuit court slightly reversed that to allow the abortion pill to come back into play, but they had serious regulations on it, including, I think, that it couldn't be prescribed after 6 weeks of pregnancy. And now the U.S. Supreme Court is mulling this over, and they have kept those regulations in place. And so I think, it, you know, for right now, we are in a win-win situation of, if it's not outright banned, it is at least severely regulated and limited compared to what it has been. And so if that's the baby step that we have to take to completely ban it outright, then so be it. But I hope that it's the hole in the dam. I would be shocked if the U.S. Supreme Court really had a case on the merits on this after all the blowback that they had last year. So I'm going to think that they're going to find some way to get out of this on a technicality and not have to actually hear this case on the merits. But we'll see. Hope springs eternal.
Yes. A federal judge ordered Planned Parenthood and four of its affiliates to turn over a narrow range of documents related to its fetal tissue donation program in a highly acrimonious lawsuit accusing anti-abortion activists of smearing the organization. Do you follow that? Do you know about the federal offense of selling fetal tissue?
I know about that. I don't know about the specific case that you're mentioning, but I do know about the federal offense of tissue trafficking.
Okay. 42 U.S. Code 289G-2 prohibitions regarding human fetal tissue. It shall be unlawful for any person to knowingly acquire, receive, or otherwise transfer any human fetal tissue for valuable consideration if the transfer affects interstate commerce. Yeah. Based on that law, sounds like Planned Parenthood is a criminal organization.
Well, it is so vitally important, the work that organizations like Live Action and then the Center for Medical Progress in 2015 did in uncovering these types of issues. Live Action really got the ball rolling with their undercover reporting of what was happening inside of Planned Parenthood when it came to, pimps bringing minors in to procure abortions and not reporting that to the proper authorities. And then in 2015, all of these, you know, fetal body part trafficking instances. I think that even though it didn't happen, that there was a case in 2016 in front of the Supreme Court right after Justice Scalia died that could have overturned Roe. And it didn't happen then. But I think those 2015 videos got the ball rolling of, you know, not only is the science caught up to where we are, that we know that this is a human life, but what are these people doing? You know, they're not content enough to perform this quote unquote medical procedure. They are now engaged in the trafficking of body parts and tissue from these babies. And so so that got people thinking not only of the issue of abortion, but the business model behind it. And I think was a huge contributor to Dobbs coming out last year.
Yeah. And just to put some icing on that, Planned Parenthood was forced to admit in court to harvesting aborted fetal parts by Samantha Kamen at Washington Examiner, September 12th, 2019, in a recent preliminary hearing in the court case against the Center for Medical Progress, a Planned Parenthood official admitted to harvesting aborted fetal parts for the purpose of selling them to human tissue procurement companies. That is so gross. And workers at Massachusetts's four Planned Parenthood clinics voted to unionize with an overwhelming 98% vote. About 200 employees, ranging from frontline healthcare workers to patient navigators, will become members of Local 1199 of the Service Employees International Union. There's more political donations to Democrats in Massachusetts and the SEIU. How does unionization and campaign donations and Planned Parenthood all come together?
Well, it's all part and parcel of the liberal wing of the United States. They're all comfortable bedfellows with one another, so it only makes sense that they would even more closely connect those ties, the bind.
Yeah, that's sad. And Judicial Watch reported new HHS documents reveal millions in federal funding for University of Pittsburgh human fetal organ harvesting project, including viable and full-term babies, August 3rd, 2021. That doesn't sound good. There's your taxpayer funding right there.
Yeah. But even more reason to be grateful that we live where we live, you know, and to have no taxpayer funding of abortions or aiding of abortions, and to have these abortions banned. And my hope and prayer is that the more these types of stories come out, you know, the more widespread across the country this will become, and even, you know, blue states that are reluctant to do anything like this, but they'll see the players involved and will want to fight back against that.
Yeah. And those players don't play, because you just made it talk about the stories. It's a great segue. Guilty verdict against David Daladian as abortion industry flexes its muscles, and a decision that showed the influence of the abortion industry. A federal court in California, of course, found David Daladian guilty and awarded Planned Parenthood approximately $2.2 million from Daladian's work exposing the abortion industry, including the potentially illegal sale of aborted baby parts. Some journalists and supporters of Project Veritas have described this verdict as a blow to undercover journalism. What do you think about that?
Well, and let's not forget the California Attorney General who first signed off on the raid into David Daladian's home, which was Kamala Harris. So
thank you.
That was a feather in her hat to be able to have initiated that raid. And, you know, for so long, she was thought to have been a front runner for President Obama's Supreme Court nominee. So it made perfect sense when President Biden picked her to be vice president. So she is a political actor more than an esteemed lawyer. And she acted as such when she was attorney general in California. And that's what kicked off all of David Daladian's legal struggles. But, you know, thanks to him and his team for getting this footage out there, regardless of the consequences.
That's right. And more about the Department of Health and Human Services, Secretary and radical pro-abortion activist Javier Becerra shut down the National Institute of Health, NIH's ethics board overseeing human fetal tissue research. Under President Donald Trump, the advisory board had the authority to block fetal research proposals on ethics grounds. In April, at President Joe Biden's direction, HHS also reversed the Trump administration's policy prohibiting funding for intramural research using human fetal tissue. So the beat mm-hmm. goes on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on and on and on.
Do you know anything more about that?
No, not. I've been so focused on the state level that it's hard to keep up with the national view of what's happening. But
yeah, and hard to dismiss that this is probably the most pro-abortion administration we've ever
yes.
seen.
Oh,
in reaction to over. Yeah,
without a doubt. Yeah.
So those three Trump judges really have paid dividends in this opportunity. Yes.
And you know, that was the belief among certainly Mitch McConnell and then the Federalist Society and then President Trump was this is where the war is going to be won or lost, is on the court. And so let's do what it takes, you know, to get the proper justices on this court to make a difference. And not only that, but you know, down the line, circuit courts across the country and district courts across the country, just changing the game across the whole judicial field. So, and you know, those dividends.
And last year, HHS dispersed $265 million in total Title X grants, including $16 million to Planned Parenthood regional groups. Title X grant pays for family planning services, including contraception, pregnancy tests, STI screens, and treatment, and basic infertility treatments. Organizations receiving these grants cannot use the funds to pay for abortion services, but they obviously are. Isn't it against the federal law for taxpayer funds to be used in abortions?
Well, it is. And not only that, but 2 weeks ago, the Biden administration announced that they were revoking any Title X funding to Tennessee because we now ban abortions. So for money that's not intended to go to abortions is now being revoked because abortions are not provided in this state. So,
yeah, we should do the same thing with education funds. Yeah. I found this from 2005. Bush is right that Planned Parenthood receives $500 million a year in government funding, or to be more exact, $528 million last year, according to Planned Parenthood's latest annual report. That totals more than 40% of Planned Parenthood's total $1.3 billion in revenue for the year. You had said that they said 3%, not true, which suggests that the organization would be in some heavy financial trouble without that public funding. That was called the Hyde Amendment that was in 1977 that was supposed to prevent taxpayer dollars from funding abortions. How could this even happen? What about Republican Congresses and Democratic Congresses and anyone else following the letter of the law not funding these services?
Yeah, I mean, the answer to that is to go on and look at campaign fund donations to members of Congress and members of the Senate. It is unbelievable how much money this financially strapped nonprofit organization funnels into campaign fund accounts of all of these liberal legislators. So follow the money. There are plenty of open government transparency websites that list the organizations that fund these people, and Planned Parenthood is a key player, especially among the committees that have the ability to decide on this issue.
Yep, that's right. And I had cited Guttmacher, the polling agency, before. According to them, between 1975 and 2012, the nation saw more than 1 million abortions each year, which I said, but Guttmacher also found that of the women who had abortions in 2014, 62% reported a religious affiliation, 24% were Catholic, 17% were mainline Protestants, 13% were evangelical Protestants, and 8% identified with some other religion. Obviously, there was a huge change in the culture up to 2014 where that could happen.
Yeah.
Do you have any other comments on religion and abortion or against it?
Well, for so long, the work of the pro-life movement has been done in the pulpit and in the congregations, and you know, so many brave and bold clergy members, especially in Tennessee, who were unafraid, you know, regardless of threats of tax consequences, to put out that, you know, life is valuable and full of dignity and full of respect. And so, you know, we need to be against any threat that threatens that intrinsic value of those lives.
Intrinsic value, the Center for Medical Progress, whose undercover videos exposed Planned Parenthood. We were talking about that harvesting and sale of aborted fetal parts. The video shows that Planned Parenthood Federation of America, while under investigation in 2015, told Congress that its Gulf Coast affiliate in Houston had rebuffed an undercover proposal to sell fetal livers for $750 per liver and $1,600 for liver thymus pairs.
Yeah.
But Planned Parenthood's Gulf Coast Senior Director of Abortion Access, Tram Nugent, testified that she, quote, wanted to move forward with it. So they do have an intrinsic value on what a baby is worth.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they sure do.
That's disgusting. And Kermit Garnett, Baron Gosnell, who we talked about, we got 5 minutes left, was an American former physician and serial killer. He provided abortions at his clinic in West Philadelphia. Gosnell was convicted of the murders of three infants who were born alive after using drugs to induce birth, was convicted of manslaughter in connection with the death of one woman during an abortion procedure, and was convicted of several other medical-related crimes. So it does not draw the best of us into the industry for sure. No. All right, I just have a few more minutes with you to see if I can get through this. Biden administration has been one of the most radically pro-abortion administrations to date. Obama was one of the most radical senators in his time in Illinois. In addition to reversing policies governing research using tissue from dismembered children, Biden reversed the Mexico City policy's ban on U.S. taxpayer funding foreign abortion providers. And Becerra, again, has spent his career shielding Planned Parenthood from investigation, violating the rights of pro-life pregnancy centers and prosecuting pro-life journalists. So it's not just in America, Mexico City policy. Do you know about that?
Yeah. I mean, and you know, we have protesters close to where you are, Steve, in Mount Juliet and Middle Tennessee, who were prosecuted by the FBI and the DOJ for protesting in front of an abortion facility. And so, you know, you've got the weaponized DOJ and FBI going after pro-life prayer warriors. And now it was uncovered last week that they're seeking to infiltrate Catholic churches rather than going after the people that they really need to go after in this abortion, black market trade. So,
yeah, it really is Alice through the looking glass.
Yes.
Planned Parenthood killed 383,460 preborn babies during the 2020 to 2021 fiscal year, according to Planned Parenthood's own 2020 to 21 annual report. At an approximate charge of $750 per first trimester abortion, and even more for a late-term abortion, that equates to at least $787,931 every day. Planned Parenthood's funding comes from the government health services reimbursement and grants, 37%, private contributions and bequests, 34%, non-government health services revenues, 21%, and other sources, 8%. Who are some of the biggest private bequests?
I believe George Soros is a big funder. I know Bill and Melinda Gates are, and every celebrity in Hollywood. So with pockets like those, you know, hard to close the door for financial reasons.
Yeah. Imagine if you had that much support.
Yeah.
we'll talk about that at the end here. Headquartered in New York City, the Planned Parenthood Federation of America is the name for the national office that oversees roughly 50 affiliates. Though it operates no medical centers of its own, its affiliates operate 567 centers, 391 of which commit surgical or abortion pill abortions. Planned Parenthood Global, the international arm of Planned Parenthood Federation of America, has worked overseas for 50 years. You know anything about them?
Well, I mean, and going back to your last question, it's why this Mexico City policy is so valuable, and so valuable that President Trump issued an executive order on his first day in office, you know, reauthorizing it. And then President Biden on his first day in office reneged on it. It is an absolute shame and travesty that one of this country's largest exports are abortion services for, once again, low socioeconomic and impoverished countries around the world. We are enacting the Margaret Sanger philosophy, not only in our neighborhoods across this country, but around the entire world. And Planned Parenthood is certainly an organization that has the resources to do that, thanks to the backing of all of those private, or, you know, George Soros, Bill and Melinda Gates, who all believe in population control.
Yeah, Will, thank you so much for your time and all that you do. We appreciate you definitely here. We are at the end. Please tell our listeners where they can go to find out more about you, follow you on social, and for God's sakes, donate to your cause to help keep abortion illegal in Tennessee.
Yeah, please do. So our website is tnrtl.org, Tennessee Right to Life, tnrtl.org. People can reach me at my email, will@tnrtl.org. If you go on our website, you can find all of our social media links. You can sign up for our updates, but most especially our legislative updates. When the legislature's in session, you can be keen on what's happening there. And please know, if you've been living under a rock, follow the news from the last 3 months. Even in a conservative supermajority state, abortion is still, the war is being waged to weaken the pro-life laws that we have in this state, even by a pro-life conservative supermajority. So get in this fight and stay vigilant, because it's far from over.
Thanks again for coming on with us and sharing your story.
Thank you all. Take care.
I'm Landon Starbuck, the founder of Freedom Forever, and you're listening to the Mill Creek View podcast. I don't understand how you ever did without me.
I don't understand how I bring you down to your knees. All right, Steve, I don't know if you're on camera or not. I was tripping out on your dance moves over there. So, all right. Welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show, where we cover what we just heard. Producer Steve, hi. What did you think of our guest, Will Brewer?
I really enjoyed having Will on. And thank you for bringing these kind of individuals on. They're controversial in some circles, but quite frankly, I think Tennessee doesn't think it's controversial. You're very supportive of pro-life. And unlike here in Washington State,
Yep.
So thank
Best
you
of the
so
50.
much for bringing
Best
them
of the 50. And you, unfortunately, are trapped behind the Emerald Curtain in maybe one of the worst of the 50, if not
yes.
the bottom two.
Yep.
Okay, first things first. I love it when this happens. I truly do. We got a comment. This time on Rumble. This time for national champion rodeo Cole Walker. Just yesterday's show, 84. See, don't have to wait long to comment on a show. This from GS Hockey One, maybe Jashaki One. Congratulations, Cole. Congratulations to the whole family. Support Walker Waste and Walker Diesel. Great people. Thank you, GS Hockey One. Cole thanks you. And I thank you for listening and commenting on the show. Pass it around. We'll get a hockey guy on here someday, even if your name is GS Shockey. I don't know, but okay. There's an old saying that if you come at the king, then you best not miss. It's an old and still around because it's true saying. Elon Musk shreds BBC reporter who can't name one example of Twitter hate speech. That's a lesson one BBC journalist should have learned before he tried and failed to challenge self-described chief twit Elon Musk for allegedly allowing hate speech to flourish on Twitter since purchasing the site. The journalist couldn't prove one specific example of hate speech he had seen on Twitter, and Musk took him to task for his unpreparedness in remarkable fashion. Quote, "We've spoken to people very recently who were involved in moderation, and they just say there are not enough people to police this stuff, particularly around hate speech in the company," BBC US tech reporter James Clayton said in an interview released Tuesday night. Is that something that you want to address? Listen to this. Elon absolutely wrecks this kid in way over his head.
What do you mean to describe a hateful thing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just content that will solicit a reaction, something that may include something that is slightly racist or slightly sexist, those kinds of things.
So you think if something is slightly sexist, it should be banned?
Is that what
you're saying?
I'm not saying anything.
I'm just curious. I'm trying to understand what you mean by hateful content. And I'm asking for specific examples. And you just said that if something is slightly sexist, that's hateful content. Does that mean that it should be banned?
Well, you've asked me whether my feed, whether it's got less or more. I'd say it's got slightly more.
That's why I'm asking for examples. Can you name one example?
I honestly don't. You can't name a single example. I'll tell you why, because I don't actually use that for you feed anymore, because I just don't particularly like it.
But you said
actually, a lot of people are quite similar. I only look at my following.
You said you've seen more hateful content, but you can't name a single example, not even one.
I'm not sure I've used that feed for the last 3 or 4 weeks.
How did you see the hateful content?
Because I've been using Twitter since you've taken it over for the last 6 months.
Okay, so then you must have at some point seen for you hateful content. I'm asking for one example.
Right.
And you can't give a single one.
And I'm saying, I say so
that you don't know what you're talking about.
Really?
Yes, because you can't give me a single example of hateful content, not even one tweet. And yet you claimed that the hateful content was high.
Well,
that's a false.
No, what I claimed.
You just lied.
What I claimed was, there are many organizations that say that that kind of information is on the rise. Now, whether it has on
Give
my feed or
example.
Not, I mean, I, right, and
literally
if you look at something
one.
Like the Strategic Dialogue Institute in the UK, they will say that. So
people will say all sorts of nonsense. I'm literally asking for a single example, and you can't name one.
Right, and as I've already said, I don't use that feed. But let's,
then how would you know? That
I don't think this is getting anywhere.
You literally said you experienced more hateful content, and then couldn't name a single example.
Right, and as I said,
that's absurd.
I haven't actually looked at that feed.
How would you know this hateful content?
Because I'm saying that's what I saw a few weeks ago. I can't give you an exact example. Let's move on.
Let's move on. I'm looking really bad and digging a hole deeper and deeper as this goes by. Okay, the great COVID-19 vaccine bribe, Steve. COVID-19 Vaccine Provider Incentive Program by Peter McCullough, MD, and John Leake. Many readers of this Substack have doubtless wondered why their healthcare providers, i.e. doctors, repeatedly exhorted them to get the COVID-19 vaccine and boosters. In my extended social circle, I heard many reports of doctors being downright pushy about it, as though getting the COVID-19 vaccine was the single most pressing matter of medicine and health. Even patients who recently recovered from COVID-19 were urged by their doctors to get the shots, as were patients who had bad reactions to the first injection. For a long time, Dr. McCullough and I wondered if these doctors really were that brainwashed, or was there some other explanation for their zeal? A few days ago, fellow Substack author Tessa Lena, Tessa Fights Robots, published this document that was apparently circulated to doctors with patients insured by Anthem Blue Shield and Blue Shield Medicaid in the state of Kentucky. The document raised a number of intriguing questions. I wonder how many members might be registered in a given practice. That is, how many of those $125 bonuses per vaccination members could be busy and efficient doctors with a good support staff received? Secondly, how many of these COVID-19 vaccine providers' incentive programs were operating in the United States during 2021? As we awakened souls try to figure out what's going on in our bizarre world, it's always useful to follow the money. It always leads to the explanation for any strange state of affairs that puzzles us. I should rename this show Follow the Money. It's always the money. Oh, and the spouses. Got to watch the whole family. It's tribal. Congratulations, Producer Steve. Your elected officials acted and you got a new law. Washington State can take children from parents for gender transitions and abortions. Did you know that?
Yeah.
The Washington State Senate passed SB 5599. It allows the state to take away children legally if parents don't consent to gender transition surgeries, for example, cutting off breasts and penises and putting them on heavy-duty drugs for life. They call it healthcare. All radical Democrats voted yes, and all Republicans voted no. Interesting. I warned you all, those that listened are safe. Those still behind the Emerald Curtain are plucked. Here's more. SB 5599 allegedly protects children from abuse to minors, quote, seeking or receiving protected healthcare services for a homeless shelter or host home, so they don't have to tell their parents or guardians. They don't care about any other abuse. It actually promotes child abuse. State law currently requires informing parents or guardians within 72 hours. The bill claims parents or guardians would subject the children to abuse or neglect. Parental rights are disappearing. It's one of the left's goals. The bill includes youth seeking abortions or irreversible gender surgeries to the list of compelling reasons. Inslee is eager to sign it. I think now he has. Washington state law defines gender-affirming care. It includes the following procedures, among others: breast augmentation, facial feminization surgeries, facelift, puberty blockers, facial masculinization surgeries, forehead brow lift, genital mutilation surgeries such as vaginectomies or penis removals, hair removal by electrolysis or laser, hysterectomy, abortions, tracheal shaves, rhinoplasty, skin resurfacing, liposuction, mastectomy, penile implant, voice modification. Sounds like a great place to move, live, and raise a family. Not.
Not.
April 11th, Undivided, op-ed by Brandy Cruz. Parents are the last people Democrats should be pissing off. That's a catchy headline. With a single statement, Washington State Senator Marco Leas showed his hand. There would be no going back, no more hiding it. No amount of words or empathy op-eds could reverse the damage done to his fellow Democrats. Party leaders may not realize it yet, but they will. Quote, I look forward to a future in Washington where every single family supports their trans youth to achieve the care and success that they need, he said. Until that day, it's up to us to make sure that there are safe places for them to learn and grow and thrive. In other words, he believes the government can parent better than you can. There is only one thing you can do. Fight. Fight like parents in Tenino and Emenclaw who are pushing back. Those are Washington
cities. Tenino.
Tenino, thank you. I'm really bad at that. Who are pushing back against the placement of sexually violent predators in unsecured facilities near homes and school bus stops. Fight like parents in Linwood who protested the opening of an opioid treatment facility near a park where their kids play, where Steve is sitting right now. Fight like families in Seattle's Chinatown who successfully stopped the expansion of a homeless complex in their neighborhood amid rising crime. Fight like parents who packed school boards meetings to get their kids back in the classroom. Fight like thousands of parents who signed up to testify against Senate Bill 5599. Parents who rejected the narrative that they are incapable of loving their children if they won't let them receive life-altering gender interventions. Today in Washington, there is a growing army of voters who are not only fed up with government interference in their homes, but government ineptitude outside their homes. Democrats would be wise to watch the horizon. Well, you can always complain about it by writing to your congressperson or going on a talk show and expressing your First Amendment protection, freedom of speech, right, Steve?
Yeah, you can also just be activated, Steve.
No, you can't. SHB 1333 to criminalize free speech and independent thought in Washington State. Number one, SHB 1333 would criminalize thought and express under an invented category of offenses called domestic violent extremism. Two, Attorney General Bob Ferguson requested the bill in order to prosecute some people for words and speech rather than for violent acts. Three, under the bill, government officials would decide whose words and whose speech would be subject to criminal prosecution. Wonder which side of the political divide they would choose. Four, the Attorney General's office would increase surveillance of citizens for perceived violations of words and speech prohibitions. Five, citizens would be encouraged to report friends and neighbors to the state for officially banned phrases, thoughts, and expression.
I think that fails, Steve.
Well, they tried it. Sounds like East Berlin to me.
Yeah.
The name of this show is The Mill Creek View. The congresswoman from Mill Creek, Washington, is April Berg. She sponsored that crap. My predecessor let her advertise in the paper in her first campaign, big damn mistake. According to A.G. Ferguson, domestic violent extremism encompasses various forms of extremist and political violence like threats, coercion, and intimidation, online disinformation, extremist recruitment, and government infiltration efforts, and the general spread of extreme white supremacism and anti-government ideologies. A summary of the report says that the people's words and speeches, not physical acts of violence, are dangerous to human life and health and are the true targets of the bill. The report also recommends that law enforcement target precursors of acts of domestic terrorism, which would be speech, as well as threats, online disinformation, and white supremacist anti-government ideologies. But hey, it ain't all bad. Real estate market is booming, so there's that. Oh, snap. What's this say? It's been dubbed the Affordable Housing Act, but House Bill 1628, also known by most as the Real Estate Tax Bill, proposes to increase the supply of affordable housing by allowing cities to adjust the state and local real exercise tax. That'll work. Across the state, there is a housing crisis, CHOP said in March. There is a tremendous shortage of housing, and the great need is for homes for people with low income. We have a very serious crisis in housing, and I believe this is a tool to address it, said April Berg, Democrat, Mill Creek. There she is again. Real winner there. Fine, you say. I'll just rent it and never sell. Okay. New law maximizing late fee for non-rental payments, $10. Not $10 a day, $10. Good luck with that. As Jazz Shaw wrote in hotair.com, someday in the future, when survivors are clearing the wreckage after we fight off the army of AI robots that wipe out most of humanity, they will comb through whatever records remain to figure out when and where everything went so wrong. The West Coast of the United States in 2022 and 23 would probably be a good place to start. Let's play clip number two.
I'm looking for the one with Seymour Hersh because it's a policy and press hall event. So shouldn't we be talking about the Nord Stream since that's the biggest story of the century? And you guys, you know,
I'm sorry.
I mean, you have the executive editor of the New York Times there who came out with a phony story to try and block Seymour Hersh. It's just kind of funny how that happened, you know? I mean, did you even acknowledge Seymour Hersh? All of you are executive editors of papers that broke Pentagon, My Lai, Watergate. Is this the same papers or not? I mean, is there anything you've gotten right in the last 20 years, or am I mistaken about that? I mean, it's just kind of funny because Iraq, wrong. Syria, wrong. Russiagate, really wrong. Okay, I mean, the list goes on and on. So the last thing you could do to try and actually fix your reputation is acknowledge that through leaks, we had to find out that Zelensky was going to bomb Moscow on the anniversary. I mean, if you're so impartial, shouldn't you at least say, right, that Zelensky was going to bring us on the verge of World War III? That seems pretty fair. While Julian Assange rots in prison, all of you've got, you know, fat checks, because he's in jail for doing your job. And you know what? Tucker Carlson ain't no Seymour Hersh, but he did something you guys are scared to do, speak the truth and actually be critical of the war, which is why he was actually fired from Fox, because you are all cowards, every single one of you. None of you have actually had any relevancy. And you know what? The mainstream press is now dying. Nobody's ever going to listen to you again. You have no credibility with the public. The only people who care about what you have to say are elite assholes who have nothing productive to say anymore. And it's dying off. So Will you at least say something, either about Nord Stream or Ukraine or the fact that Zelensky brought us to the verge of World War III and the only reason we knew about that was through leaks? Go ahead. It's a free speech event, right? You guys are the press. Let's say something here. Mr. Khan, come on. You know, you're the executive editor of the New York Times, you know? I'm just trying to get into some good trouble here, man. Ooh, listen, Karen, get out of my face for a second. I got to talk to these gentlemen. Okay. Well, I just want to hear what they have to say. Go ahead. I'm done.
Wait your turn.
You're not going to tell them to you. Go.
And I usually don't play clips that long, but that was so good.
It was.
So necessary. Oh, that was Jose Vega from the Bronx, baby, like my mama. Don't mess with PS246. ever see Fort Apache, the Bronx, or Warriors?
Yes.
Or the best one, Blackboard Jungle? That was my mom.
Not
the Warriors, but yeah. Come out and play.
Did it.
New Yorkers don't play, man. So he confronted the executive editors for New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times, and Reuters. And I was hard-pressed to find anything that he said that wasn't accurate. On their censorship of Seymour Hersh, who covered the Nord Stream 2 bombing, Julian Assange, Tucker Carlson, Russiagate, then the Dean of Columbia and security pushed him to the ground to silence him. Mainstream media is in big trouble. Explosive. He told all the media there to their face, Tucker was fired for doing your job. Explosive, but true. Stay tuned for my thought of the day. Welcome to my quotes for the day. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Mill Creek View Podcast. Just go to Rumble or Spotify or iTunes and hit the subscribe button and follow us. While you're there, go ahead and leave a comment. And thanks for doing it. And hope to see you at the Riley Gaines event tonight at Moonshine Harley Davidson. We'll see. Should I put this spec down? Horton thought with alarm. If I do, these small persons may come to great harm. I can't put it down, and I won't. After all, a person's a person, no matter how small. Please don't harm all my little folks, who have as much right to live as us bigger folks do. Do you see what I mean? They've proved they are persons, no matter how small, and their whole world was saved by the smallest of all. A person's a person, no matter how small, and you, very small persons, will not have to die if you make yourselves heard. So come on now and try. Dr. Seuss, Horton Hears a Who. Did you know it was a pro-life story? Now you know why they wanted to cancel Theodore Geisel. He is known for his work writing and illustrating more than 60 books under the pen name Dr. Seuss. His work includes many of the most popular children's books of all time, selling over 600 million copies and being translated into more than 20 languages. Good luck canceling that. The talk show host Jerry Springer, a former mayor of Cincinnati whose work was vastly influential in daytime TV worldwide, has died. He was 79, born February 13, 1944, in London during World War II, to parents Richard and Margot, German Jews who had fled to England to escape the Holocaust. The family later moved to the Queens neighborhood of New York City, where Springer was just a few years old. He studied political science at Tulane University and later received a law degree from Northwestern University, best known for his always controversial Jerry Springer talk show, which ran in syndication for 27 years from 1991 to 2018 and aired nearly 5,000 episodes. Springer hosted America's Got Talent season 2 and 3. He also competed on season 3 of Dancing with the Stars in 2006 and just last year competed on season 8 of The Masked Singer. That's it for this episode. Rest in peace. Really hope you liked it. Thank you, Will Brewer, for caring about human liberty, pursuit of happiness, and without life, we have none of it. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of mcview.us. Peace in our time.
Boil that dust speck, boil that dust speck, boil that dust speck.
Children and the pumpkins at the county fair. They were looking for America, behind every turn, flying the very colors that so many love to burn. I'll cruise the countryside with my dad and my brother, row after row of cotton and corn, moving through this place just like rolling thunder.
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.